When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
Harry Douglas in for J. Will today. You know, guys, it gets me thinking this whole Brian Flores lawsuit against the NFL. He's not going to be anyone's puppet. That's probably why his team responds to him and doesn't quit on him. That's why he has winning records his last two seasons after taking over a terrible mess that Adam Gase left them. Team never quit on him. Winning team. Brian Flores and his attorneys, by the way, are going to be on Get Up at 9:30 a.m. on ESPN. It's, half hour from now, not even. I wonder, guys, how many other African-American head coaches were put in positions where it was clear that ownership wanted them to tank? How many of them then wound up with bad records and were fired and replaced with white head coaches once, you know, you get the fruits of the tanking, which are high draft picks? It makes me wonder. Because we went from a league key with 8 African-American head coaches, which is it's underrepresentation considering the league is 70% African-American plus, to 1 African-American head coach in 32 teams key.
Yeah, but okay, so let's take a look, quick stab at the recent history of African-American head coaches in the National Football League. When you know, Tony Dungy would never do such a thing because Dungy teams were winning. And he was with the Colts and us and the Buccaneers. Mike Tomlin, we know about. Steve Wilkes got fired because they felt like he wasn't doing whatever a good enough job. David Culley, same thing. Lovie Smith went to a Super Bowl in Chicago.
But wait, hold on, slow. David Culley, look at the mess that he was put. He's almost 70 years old. Put in a position of a team where he's basically an interim coach in all but title. And they were in Culley's not a good example to argue against that. Right, like, hey, here's an African American coach in a position to succeed. You know what I mean?
Well, he wasn't. He was. Look, when to start with, he was there because nobody else at the time wanted the job. I'm just rattling off in my mind recent history of African American head coaches. You know that I'm looking at and saying, okay, these coaches were good. Here's the situation. Yeah. We know what Culley was in. Ty Bowles tried as much as he could with the Jets. They just never got it turned around.
Jim Caldwell
was a winning coach in Detroit as well as in Indianapolis. So I think I've named Leslie Frazier in Minnesota. I think I've named pretty much everybody, and I may miss one or two
Hugh
along
Jackson,
the way.
Hugh Jackson, I was extremely critical of, lost almost every game, right? That team reaped the benefits of high draft picks to one extent or another. You could argue about the Baker Mayfield pick, but they reap the benefits of high draft picks. Hugh Jackson's gone, and people like me in the media pointing to Hugh Jackson going, P.U., he stunk as a head coach. But it makes me wonder, what position was he actually in? I don't know. And now, look, Brian Flores hasn't proven any of these things. These are allegations. But given the history of this country, especially when you're talking about white power structure, would it shock anyone to find out that the allegations are true?
No, it wouldn't shock me at all. It wouldn't shock me at all. And it's just like we see general managers get hired, right, of color. And it's a lot of times I wonder, okay, these guys are in these positions, and why aren't they hiring, you know, black head coaches? And it's probably because there are people above them telling them who they have to hire. And it goes to that power struggle. It goes to that power search that these owners, that these presidents and all these guys have over organization to say, hey, we're going to hire you as a general manager, but at the end of the day, we got the final say in what we're going to do, which they are the owners, and that's understandable. But if that general manager feel like this coach or this guy is the right guy for the job and you don't, and that head coach, that general manager has been in a position to make these decisions and be more qualified and know the ins and outs of everything, why wouldn't you trust them in that sense?
So
It just depends. I understand what you're saying, Harry, and I feel a certain way about that. Depending on who that general manager is, I can tell you if he's pushing back. If it's Ozzie Newsome, he hiring the best dude regardless, right? 100%. He's just trying to win football games. And he's going to hire the best person. And if that person at that particular time is the right hire and he happens to be black, Ozzie Newsome is going to hire him. You know, Reggie McKenzie, he's going to hire a black coach. But if Jack Del Rio, who he knows and has a relationship with, he feels is the right coach, he's going to hire that guy. So I look at every individual a little bit different. Right? I just do.
Think of what a bad position it even puts on what a black GM, right, or executive, where now you have to feel the added responsibility to hire an African-American head coach. And there are many good candidates, but it's almost like you're handcuffed in a way from hiring a guy if he's, like you just mentioned, like what if he thought Jack Del Rio is just the best guy for the job? And you're looked at sideways if you do that.
But see, that's why I'm working with you now, Max. And I'm working with Harry Douglas. Because Keyshawn Johnson, they already know coming through the door. I'm going to give my people the benefit of the doubt because I know they are qualified and can do the job. That's why somebody like me, putting me in a position of power like that, oh, man, I'm – you look at it through college, you look at it through the pros, the nepotism is alive and kicking. It may not be nepotism as far as family go, but it's nepotism, it's friendships and favoritism. And I like this guy because we went to high school together. Or we used to work 30 years ago. We drove together as GAs at a college somewhere. Now I'm on top. I'm going to bring him for the ride with me. So hiring somebody like me, oh, man, that'd be your worst mistake.
Right,
you're going to win a lot of games.
But an African-American executive, Harry, is put in the position where he can't say my people's before my people without getting looked at sideways, right?
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's why I said earlier, Max and Key, that when you look at this entire situation, the most feared thing in America is a strong black man that's smart and intelligent and has a presence. Because if somebody like Key goes in there, listen, you're not going to tell me what to do, and I've been involved in football my entire life.
You're absolutely not going to tell me what to do.
You see what I'm saying? So that's why I say one of the most fearful things in this country is a strong black man with a presence who's very intelligent.
Let me back up just for people who want to know the details on this. We've been talking about it all morning, but if you're just tuning in, Brian Flores alleges the Giants interviewed him last month for their head coaching vacancy for no other reason than compliance with the NFL's Rooney Rule, which requires teams to interview minority candidates for their open positions. The rule says, in part, that teams must hold an in-person interview with at least one external minority candidate for any GM or head coaching opening. Flores says he interviewed with the Giants via Zoom on the 18th of January. On the 24th of January, new GM Joe Shane finalized his second in-person interview date for January 27th, right? Hours later, the lawsuit alleges, Brian Flores receives a series of text messages from Patriots coach Bill Belichick, who told Flores he heard from Buffalo and the New York Giants that you're their guy, the Giants guy. So Flores asked Belichick to clarify because he's like, wait, I don't even have my second in-person interview yet. That's a couple days from now. Hey, Bill Belichick, do you mean me or do you think you're texting Brian Daboll? Was also in the running for the job. Belichick was like, oops, whoops, yeah. I meant to text Daboll. Sorry about that. So Flores alleges that his ensuing interview with the Giants on the 27th was a sham, and New York hired Daboll several days later. Now, part of the Rooney Rule is to get people in the door. It's not necessarily that you're going to get that job, right, but that you get introduced to the circles of power in a different kind of way. You're considered differently. And the Rooney Rule, even if the intentions are in the right place, something is obviously more needs to be done because there is one African-American head coach out of 32 positions at the moment in the NFL. Here's Brian Flores, former Dolphins head coach, on CBS this morning talking about the Belichick text. Listen.
Humiliation, disbelief, anger. You know, I've worked so hard to get to where I am from in football, to become a head coach. Put 18 years in this league, and it was to go on at what was going to be a sham interview. I was hurt.
So, guys, why'd you take the second interview then? If that's the way you were feeling, here's his answer.
There's still hope. Maybe it's call it the audacity of hope. And I have a belief that, you know, there's good in people. I just do.
We knew he wasn't getting that job. On the day before that Giants interview, we reached out to you, CBS, to all of you, to start talking about doing this interview today because we knew he wasn't getting the job. We knew it was a setup. We knew they were just trying to comply with the Rooney Rule. We started drafting the complaint, and here we are.
So you say why? Yeah. Why do it? Because you know, anything could happen. You know, Brian Daboll could slip on a rock and break his ankle and don't want to coach again. I mean, anything could happen in this situation. So you are a guy in faith and belief, and you say, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to do the interview. Worst coming to worst, this is what I got.
To Harry Douglas's point, you know, he quoted just now, Flores quoted, he said, call it the audacity of hope. That's the title of Barack Obama's, former U.S. President Barack Obama's second book. And what happened after this country elected its first African-American president? You blink, and there are laws being enacted all over the country which demonstrably make it more difficult for black people to vote, to Harry Douglas's point.
Bingo.
From earlier in the show. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max is presented by Progressive Insurance. We got a lot to do still in this show. Let's bring Marvin Lewis into this conversation. Hey, Coach, how you doing?
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for jumping on with us.
I think y'all changing the subject on me, huh?
What subject?
No, we ain't going to change no subject on you. How are we going to change the subject on the black head coach when we talking about black issues? Marvin, come on now.
we weren't going there on Monday, though, or Sunday when we said yes, but I feel you.
Well, do you feel like you want to stick to the Bengals, or are you uncomfortable addressing this right now?
No, I you know, obviously it's the, you know, it's red hot. And, you know, I don't know Brian, but I know he's a very, very good football coach. And, you know, I've followed his career, you know, and watched him coached against him, you know, when he was an assistant and so forth, and just watched him climb the ladder and do what he's done. And obviously this is something that he feels very, very strongly about. And, you know, so it's a strong, bold move, but something he feels very strongly about.
Marvin,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, I've been knowing you for a very long time, since high school. You recruited me in high school. Think about how long ago that was. And been knowing you as a defensive coordinator in the league before you got your first head coaching and only head coaching job in the National Football League with the Cincinnati Bengals. And I remember when you were the hottest coach in America as a defensive coordinator with the Baltimore Ravens, and yet and still, it took a while for people to make the decision to hire you as a head coach until you became successful as a defensive coordinator and won a Super Bowl and the Cincinnati Bengals pulled the trigger. We are still dealing with the same things today as we were yesterday. How does this get fixed?
That's the you hit the nail on the head. I mean, that's the thing that's just is incredible. And we have literally any progress that was made has now gone backwards. And, you know, myself, other coaches, I owe it to the guys who came before me and so forth to continue to support this. I mean, that's why, you know, through last year took the opportunity with Octagon to do this career development and help coaches and help players transition into coaching. Because, yeah, we've gone backwards. We haven't gone forward. And, you know, I owe it to Mike Brown and his family for giving me that opportunity to become a head coach when so many other times it didn't happen. You know, when people said it was going to happen and it didn't happen. And so that's, you know, it's disappointing that we're still here, obviously. It's disillusioned so many of these young minority coaches right now. When I talk to them and they reach out to me like, Coach, what am I doing? I mean, a guy that you know very well that's on the staffs here, you know, at Arizona State now, they come in my office like, Coach, what's going on? I mean, what do I do? How do I feel good about my future when this is what I see happening above me?
That's deep. Coach Lewis, I want to take it to a guy that you actually played against on numerous of occasions, being in the AFC. What was your reaction to hearing that Tom Brady was officially retiring?
Well, I wish he'd have retired like a couple times before I had to play him. But, you know, the last time we coached against Tom Brady was his first game back in Foxborough after the suspension. And the thing that I said after this game, as much as we practice, as much as we work to defend him, you can't replicate him live football and how he can be here on this side of the field. And you take that away and boom, the ball goes back to the other side of the field right now. And just, you know, obviously, you know, likely the finest quarterback may have played the game, obviously the most winning, most successful. So, you know, tremendous player, tremendous career. Has made whatever team obviously he's been on better, you know, since 2003 when he became a starting quarterback.
Marvin Lewis, former Bengals head coach. Speaking of the Bengals, Coach, what on Sunday we thought you'd be talking about are the Cincinnati Bengals. Just give me your impression of Joe Burrow.
You know, just incredible. You know, I had the conversation with Mike Brown yesterday about that. You know, he is just, you know, he makes breaks. He makes things go. And whether he's throwing the football, whether he's running and sliding for a first down, he just makes it happen. Doesn't seem to waver, unflappable, and just keeps coming back. And very impressive.
We always talk about turnaround, right? What has allowed the Cincinnati Bengals to turn this thing around so fast?
Well, I think, you know, they had a group of players who had success before that are still left there that have watched these young guys come in and, as they have said, continually grind. And that's the great thing. And then you have that the young, the Mixons, the Tyler Boyds, the Jesse Bates, the Sam Hubbards, who we know could play at a very, very high level. And then you add Chase and Burrow and the other receiver, 85. You add them into the mix, and then you get the, you know, Henderson had such a great year as a rusher. They did a good job fixing the secondary, and they're playing. Everybody's playing at a high level, and you got to, you know, and you can't take it away. You know, obviously the coaching staff has done a fine job. They were the least penalized team in the National Football League this year. You know, they had some other chinks in their armor, but they overcome them by not hurting themselves with penalties.
Marvin Lewis, former Cincinnati Bengal head coach, joining us on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. Marv, when you look at the offensive line of Cincinnati Bengals, they gave up 9 sacks to the Tennessee Titans. Joe Burrow was knocked down 13 times. The Kansas City Chiefs obviously harassed him at moments during the game. Now they go up against a fierce defensive front 7 with the Los Angeles Rams led by Aaron Donald. How concerned are you about that offensive line against this defense?
Oh, you know, there's no doubt. I mean, they're playing, you know, one of the best defensive linemen in the history. And, you know, that's got to be a focal point of them being able to protect the quarterback. They're going to have to be able to run the football key in order to slow him down. You know what I'm saying? And he's just as disruptive in the run game, which people never give him enough credit for. So that's going to be something that they're really going to have to do a great job of. You don't want to sit there and have a lot of third and longs against that front group because, you know, they've got the great outside rushers as well. And that's what helps is that they're not going to allow that quarterback, you know, they force the edges and make that quarterback step up into him.
What do you think about Zach Taylor, the job he's done with this team and getting these guys to be on board and being that leader and having that belief that his team can make it this far to the Super Bowl?
Well, you got to give the coach credit. And, you know, he's come in, he's had a plan. And, you know, obviously it was a tough first couple years, but look where they are now. And so you can't discount that. So, you know, he's done a good job. The coaching staff around him has done a good job, and they've got the team believing. I mean, they won how many games in the fourth quarter? And these playoff games have all come down the stretch. So, you know, that comes from a good belief and, you know, kind of not flinching.
Before we let you go, you mentioned good belief, Marvin. It reminds me of our Super Bowl run that we had with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and Coach Tony Dungy laid down that foundation. And it would be a mistake on my part to not mention that you laid down the foundation for some of those key figures on the Cincinnati Bengals team under your tutelage until Zach Taylor took over.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, that was my job. And I failed to get Mike that Super Bowl. And hopefully he gets that Super Bowl this year, because that's why we do this, as you know, and both coaches and players together, why we do this thing. And, you know, they're blessed to have this opportunity, and just to see the smiles on people's faces, you know, that I know it worked their tails off for me and been just as diligent in that organization. Seeing the smiles on Sunday at the end of that game was kind of heartwarming. And like I said, I had a conversation with the owner yesterday, and I just feel good for him because he's been beaten up a lot, and for the city, frankly. You know, they don't have to feel inferior at all. You know, I always thought, like, well, Pittsburgh got this, Pittsburgh got that. They don't worry about that no more. Just be you, and they can do that.
Well, when Marvin Lewis was the head coach of the Bengals, they used to win the AFC North like three, four, five times, coach. And so they're back to some winning ways and then some. That's Marvin Lewis, ladies and gentlemen, former Bengals head coach. Thanks for jumping on with us, Coach.
Oh, my pleasure, man. I appreciate it. Thank you.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/unsportsmanlike today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/unsportsmanlike.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
Commend Brian Flores more for essentially saying, I may be sacrificing my professional future, but this is too important for me to not do it. What an amazing amount of guts and courage.
Most of the time, these interviews are sham interviews. They're just there to appease what we know as the Rooney Rule right now.
Brian Flores is looking at a bigger picture. I may lose my job, but this kind of stuff that's going on, that I put out these allegations, that has got to change when it comes to that in the National Football League.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Harry Douglas in for J. Will. Hey, Harry, let me start with you on this one. We got Chris Mortensen coming on in a few minutes. Just as a black man in America, when you hear what went on with Brian Flores, what is your gut reaction? Right now it's an allegation, but what's your gut reaction?
Damn, again? I'm tired. It's the same thing over and over again. When is it going to stop? How much longer do we have to go through this? When I say we, black people, how much longer do we have to go through this? Those are my reactions. But then again, another reaction that I had was, I'm not surprised. And it's sad. It's sad to this point. Like, I have to say, I'm not surprised. Think about that, Max. To say I'm not surprised is huge. And something must be done. But then on the flip side of it, my reaction to Brian Flores filing the lawsuit is that he's sacrificing. Thank you. And that's all I can say about it. Thank
you. It was key.
Like, yeah, I could piggyback off that as well. Yeah. And surprise. Surprise, but not surprise at the same time, because this is nothing new. This has been going on in the National Football League since the National Football League was created. So it's a situation, like Harry said, he is sacrificing something for the greater good, and I applaud him for that, knowing that he is still young and a hell of a football coach and could potentially lose his opportunity to continue being a professional football coach, or even collegiate coach for that matter, because this, even though it's the NFL, this same behavior trickles down to athletic departments.
No, there were those who warned Colin Kaepernick, for example, when he did what he did. Hey, careful, you're not going to get back in the league. But, you know, I pointed out at the time, Kurt Flood sacrificed his career and ushered in the era of free agency, right? Brian Flores is willing, clearly, to risk his coaching future on the altar of institutional change. With that, ESPN NFL insider Chris Mortensen is with us. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good morning, Mort. Mort, let me ask you this question. Why does it seem as though minority candidates aren't taken seriously, and this is such a problem in the NFL? When we interview or go to interview or have opportunities to have jobs, and I've been in that situation a couple times, as you know, and it feels like we are never taken serious, that it's always a token interview, so to speak.
There is no denying that what you just said is true. I have not been wise enough in some instances to discern what is a token interview and what is a real interview. I know of one coach right now, a black man, really bright, who was scheduled to interview for one of the vacant jobs. I'm not going to name the team, and I'm not going to name the coach, because he was going to decline that interview, and he spoke to another friend who was black, who told him, take the interview. You're legitimate here. I checked on it. So, in other words, right now he's going into that interview with the belief that it's going to be a real interview. Now, we just saw with Brian Flores, and I did watch Brian on CBS this morning, who had that situation with the Giants, where he realized that at least based off the text messages from Bill Belichick, who didn't know he was texting Brian Flores, thought he was texting Brian Daboll, that in Bill Belichick's mind, the decision already was made that Daboll was going to get the job, even though Brian Flores had not interviewed yet. Now, why does that happen? Listen, I'm 70 years old. I am a white man. During the really social justice awareness period we've gone through the last few years, especially in recent years, I myself have had to go back and just say, find out the roots of the history of what's happened in the past 400 years, had to self-examine myself. Now, my mother is Honduran. I'll mention Brian Flores is a Honduran, but my dad was a white mechanic. And I grew up a certain way, but I can tell you this much, my mother kept me on a straight track. But I still, in doing my own history of trying to get a firm understanding of what's going on in this country, you know, what does systemic mean? Even my age, I'm still getting an understanding and grasp on it. Now, listen, we had 8 minority coaches, 7 of them black, in 2011. I mean, Marvin Lewis and Lovie Smith, and we know this, 4 or 5 of these guys come from the Tony Dungy tree. Mike Tomlin's in that group. I'm thinking, hey, we're on a good track here. Now, just because 70% of the players in the league are black doesn't mean that I expect 70% of the coaches to be black. I personally am disgusted by the fact that we have to identify ourselves as black or white or brown or whatever color you want to call it. To me, that's despicable. But I know this much. Brian Flores, when David Coley, who I didn't really know, when he was hired in Houston, I was thinking Leslie Frazier, maybe she'd get that job. Certainly was a guy who has a lot of qualifications. And I can tell you, though, when I watched the Texans play this year, I thought, man, they're more competitive than I thought. By the way, his defensive coordinator was Lovie Smith, a Super Bowl coach, who was fired after a 10-6 season in Chicago. And I saw them compete, and then I saw them get fired. And I saw Brian Flores get fired. And I can tell you, I was demoralized. Now, maybe I didn't speak out publicly about it because, I think at this point, words coming from me don't mean anything. I do want to just continue on one point here because it's going to be important to see how this goes forward. Brian Flores makes these allegations that have to do with the hiring practices and blacks not being given equal footing here. But in the same lawsuit, he also accuses, as you know, his owner, Stephen Ross, who hired him, Brian Flores, a black man, and Stephen Ross is white, businessman, and also has a black general manager, and Chris Greer. But he accuses them of offering him $100,000, as you know, to lose, so they tank. I remember talking about it on TV, and you hear fans talk about we need the tank. At the time, it was tank for Tua before they realized it should have been tank for Burrow. But I knew, and Key, as you know, just from being around Coach Parcells and any other coach, any other competitor, no matter what color they are, you're not going to lose a game on purpose because there's too many people who put in hard days throughout the year to go out and compete and do their best to win the game. If he has evidence that Stephen Ross offered him $100,000 per game per loss incentive, we'll have to. We need that evidence, and the league will have to investigate. They investigated Tom Brady on the allegations of deflating football, and they spent millions of dollars to do that. The league, I think, will have to refine its statement that they put out yesterday that this lawsuit has no merit and investigate that, not to mention the other allegations of tampering. There's a blurred, blended message here from Brian Flores that are separate issues, and the league, I think, is incumbent to go and investigate those issues. And then on the issue of hiring practices, that to me is, as I mentioned before, has been demoralized.
Mort, that also raised my eyebrow. Meritless, it's without merit. We're going to see where this goes. But Brian Flores was just on Get Up, and we're going to react to what he said coming right up. Mort, thanks a bunch for jumping on with us this morning.
And it's obviously a longer conversation than what I just gave you, but we'll catch up with you later. Somebody hire Keyshawn for a GM job, too, while you're at it.
I don't want it. You know that, Mort.
I'll talk to you later.
Coming up, just what I told you, Brian Flores was just on Get Up, and we're going to react to what he had to say. Keyshawn, J. Will and Max, Harry Douglas in for J. Will today, ESPN Radio.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric E-Bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
The Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max Podcast.
Can't commend Brian Flores more for essentially saying, I may be sacrificing my professional future, but this is too important for me to not do it. What an amazing amount of guts and courage.
Most of the time, these interviews are sham interviews. They're just there to appease what we know as the Rooney Rule right now.
Brian Flores is looking at a bigger picture. I may lose my job, but this kind of stuff that's going on, that I put out these allegations, that has got to change when it comes to that in the National Football League.
So Brian Flores here on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio. Harry Douglas in for J. Will today. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Brian Flores, former Dolphins head coach, who is suing the Giants, the Broncos, the Dolphins, the NFL. On Get Up moments ago with Mike Greenberg on ESPN, on why he filed the lawsuit.
We didn't have to file a lawsuit for the world to know that there's an issue from a hiring and firing practices in the National Football League.
That's correct. A lot of people have pointed this out. So why did you feel you needed to do this?
Because we need change. That was the number one reason. And I know there's a sacrifice, there's risk to that, but at the end of the day, we need change. We need change. I know many very capable black coaches, some of my staff who I know, if given an opportunity or when given an opportunity, are going to go and do a great job on their interview. And I would just hate for that to be a waste.
You know, I'm glad that he has stepped up the way that he has, because you certainly, when you stay silent, things stay silent. The louder you speak, the louder it gets. People pay attention. And I think when you look at it, this isn't going to end anytime soon. And what I mean by that is you're going to start to see active players in the National Football League, active front office people, both black and white, speak out against this. Because this is, you know, this is ridiculous. It's ridiculous that we're still sitting in here in 2022 having this conversation about bending the rules to hire somebody that you want to hire and using somebody else as a basic puppet to get around rules. We're still having this conversation. Still having the conversation. Makes zero sense.
Yeah, and it's just, I'm glad he took the initiative to be the person to sacrifice, right? Because a lot of these things don't come to light. A lot of these things don't really get looked upon or looked at correctly, because people aren't sacrificing certain things. So he reviewed this entire situation and understands that even though he can coach 30 plus years because he's that good at what he does, he understood there was a greater good for the National Football League, a greater good for this country, a greater good for black coaches and minority coaches to get an opportunity to do something that they love. When for so long they have not had those opportunities. So I will continuously say this. I commend Brian Flores for being, I'm trying to think, what's the word I can use? For being the polarized figure to stand up for what's right. And remember when we were back talking about racism and the John Gruden situation and how people in groups and things allow this stuff to go on? Well, that's another reason why Brian Flores is doing this, right? To stop certain things from going on. And I commend him. I understand where he's coming from. And I can just hear in his voice and see on his face that he's just sick and tired. He's sick and tired because for years and years and years, since the National Football League has been here, there have been people that look like you and me, Key, who are qualified for major roles in the National Football League, but have not had the opportunity or have not had the interviews for those opportunities to be successful. And sometimes it's done purposely to keep black people where white people want them, and that's beneath them.
Yeah, and when you look at it, you're comfortable with who you deal with when you are an NFL owner. Billionaires deal with billionaires and gazillionaires. They don't deal with smaller people in terms of social economics. I mean, look around the league. Ask, it's 32 owners and families. How many black friends do you honestly think they have that don't work for them, Max? Think about it.
Yeah.
Think about it. When you see these pictures of them, you don't see no black people on their yachts and their boats, mm-hmm. unless they're executives that work for their team. Yeah. you know what I'm saying? When you see all the pictures and all the different stuff, you don't see them.
You know,
you don't see it.
I'm thinking about Flores, guys.
They're not comfortable.
I hear you about the comfortable thing and where you're from and who you're comfortable around when you're in that kind of position of power. Look, the fact that there are no African-American owners in the NFL is not because black people are intrinsically worse at making money than white people. It's the history of our country. I mean, this ain't that hard. So, like, this ain't rocket science. From Brian Flores, and so, like, now they're in the position of the power structure is what it is. And I think you're right, Key. A lot of even if people don't view themselves as racist, they can be influenced by not only who they're comfortable around, who they're used to, but stereotypes, pernicious stereotypes that that can in a very kind of sneaky way affect hiring practices, even, right? To say nothing of there may be the existence of actual racists in positions of power. Now, Brian Flores' point of view, guys, you know what occurs to me? The most impressive thing to him, about him to me, and this is not to diminish strategy or tactics or anything like that, because a lot of times it seems to me that there's a pernicious stereotype that people aren't even aware, I think, is a stereotype, that when it comes to offensive coordinators, the guys getting the jobs are all like, well, these are young coaches, young white coaches, right? As though black men can't be the brains behind the operation, right?
They have to have
the force of personality, right? But in Brian Flores' case, that team in Miami never quit on him. They were awful. They were getting their teeth kicked in. They kept fighting for him, won 5 of their last 9, won 10 games the next year, and after a bad losing streak this year, put together a great winning streak and finished above 500. Is it a surprise? Because for me, it's not. That this dude is the type of guy, because coaches have to ask players to make sacrifices all the time for the greater good, who looks at a situation and stands up and says, this might not be good for me, but this is good for us. I have to do this now. Who wouldn't want that guy to be their head coach?
I agree with you. And one of the reasons why those players didn't fold on Brian Flores is because something me and Key touched on earlier. Real recognize real. We understand who's in our corners as players, or who's in your corner as a player. We understand who stands for certain things and who's a puppet and who's not going to let their character be demoralized by silliness. We understand that as players. And I say we because me and Key played in the league for a long time. So we understand who those guys are in a locker room. We understand who those guys are in the front office and across the board in businesses as well.
And that's the thing, is if you understand who you're dealing with, you have a better perspective of where things might go. And that's what a lot of these owners and presidents of these teams are afraid of. This is just the beginning, Max. It is nowhere near the end.
Not at all.
It does seem from social media I'm seeing now, texts I'm getting, DMs and stuff, that there's a whole bunch of stuff in the coming days and weeks that could break and kind of change the landscape, at least in the immediate future of the NFL. We shall see. Keyshawn Johnson and Harry Douglas, along with me, Max Kellerman, here on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max today. Harry in for J. Will. Thanks a million, Harry, for pinch hitting, as always. J. and Max will be back tomorrow morning.
Thanks for listening to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.